What I try to explain is that I say, imagine you are in a dark labyrinth or in the mountain in the dark. So you don't know where you have to go. You cannot just follow a path. The best way is to just interact with your surrounding to find the next step that won't kill you. And then do it again and do it again. So this is a little bit for me the explanation of why we need Agile, because we are in a surrounding that we don't know, and we cannot just even think that the illusion that we know and we can plan based on it. So we have to take small steps and get feedbacks as soon as possible.
That's professional Scrum Master Fateme Ramati, who, together with her colleague Esther Christine Later, explains what her work at Deconium, a 100% daughter of the VW Corporation, is all about. Now, on Everyday Counts. Welcome. Welcome here to Everyday Counts, the podcast where we talk about work, about new work, about agility and what all that means in the ever-changing surroundings that we live and work in today. My name is Christoph Braun, and I am thrilled to talk to today's guests about their experiences with new work. Please welcome Esther Christine Later and Fateme Ramati from Deconium.
Hi.
How are you?
Good. Good. Happy to be here.
Thank you so much. Judging from your surroundings, I guess that you're not in the office today, Fateme, are you?
No, I'm actually in the bedroom in this new working environment.
That's very nice. That's like everybody's situation right now. So very pleased to have that call. As you can see, I myself am in my living room. Esther, where are you calling from?
I'm actually in the office in Berlin.
Oh,
I live in Stuttgart, but I needed to have some shift of surroundings. So I visited a friend for 1 week. I do home office from her home, from her bedroom. But just today I went to the office to meet two colleagues that I've been working with since half a year and we never ever met. So it's really a nice day today.
Okay, full disclaimer for everyone who's listening right now. The following is not today's topic, but Esther, I have to ask you, after months and months of that pandemic and home office and stuff, what does it feel like to travel and what does it feel like to work in an unusual surrounding?
It's really nice because I've been sitting in the same room for 1 year in the same flat. And it's super funny to see colleagues that you have before only seen in the video, because then you see they are actually super tall or super small. It could also happen. And I just met this one. I was like, oh, you're that tall. I didn't know, because you only see until the chest.
Really nice. That must be exciting, and it must be very, very nice to have that change of perspective, of view, of place for a bit at Atlanta.
And also to have some time for chit chat, you know, just sitting across each other, and that's really missing at the moment.
Yeah, that's definitely, maybe that's something that we should talk about in a while. That situation that we are in right now with all those video calls, one after the other, that can be really, really stressful, right? And to do something else for a bit, that must be very nice. Now, I'm sorry, that was like a little detour that I needed to take here. Back to our main topic. Esther, Fateme, I am very, very pleased to talk to you. You are both Scrum Masters, professional Scrum Masters, I should say, at Deconium, which is owned at 100% by VW. I'm very much looking forward to talking to you about your experiences with agility, with the various organizations and systems that you have been working with. First, however, you both are cordially invited to answer a couple of warm-up questions, as I like to call them. The first warm-up question that I like to ask all of our little podcast's guests is the question for a work myth. So the question for an idea or a prejudice or a stereotype about work that has been around for, I don't know, decades or centuries, and of which you think that's completely bonkers. How is it possible that people believe that? So, Fatima, I think you have a little something that you wanted to tell us.
I cannot say it's century old because Agile is not that old, but as long as Agile working came, I think a lot of people heard that sentence, let's switch to Agile, we'll be faster.
Uh-huh.
And even though that is not completely wrong, but this is not the understanding that most people have about it is the myth. They think that we will be more efficient in the way that we will follow the plan. Working Agile means that we will be faster in creating real value. And mm-hmm. that real value might also mean that we will understand sooner that everything that we are doing is not creating value. Mm-hmm. And most of the time, it creates a misunderstanding for management who thought, okay, let's be agile, let's be fast. But then after some time of working, they realize what we have done is not working or it's not the real value for the user. So whenever we are introducing Agile, we try to say we are faster at creating real value, mm-hmm. not just following the plan, not just reaching a milestone. We would like to get more feedback. So it's not just developing, it's also a lot of self-reflection, a lot of looking at which kind of value we are creating.
Thank you. What do you think, where does that misunderstanding come from? So why do people associate agility with speed?
I think it's not just agility that is associated with speed. It's in general that we want to be fast. We think that we are in a competition to just be fast and to put things out, even if they are not the best quality or even if it's not really needed by anyone. And that's the shift of mind that we need, and that's what we try to bring with agility, that we don't have to hurry if we are not creating value. We are not more, we don't have to do a lot of things, maybe even do less, but the real things, the right things to be done. Mm-hmm. So you might have heard also this famous sentence, instead of doing things right, doing the right thing. So just the part that is necessary.
Yeah, so that's the distinction between efficacy and efficiency, right? Being efficient means doing things right, but you can be efficient without doing the right things, and that's pretty bad.
and unfortunately, a lot of time we are trying to optimize our processes mm-hmm. without considering the value that is coming out of it. So, of course, from a management perspective, you want to be successful, you want to secure your business, and that's why you think being faster in the older way of working, being faster was the value. But right now, speed is not the only value. You have to be fast, but also to fast first understand what is the real value that you have to bring for your customer, to be different, to have a unique selling mm-hmm. point.
Wow, thank you. Thank you so much. And I think that's a really important point. And at the same time, that's something that, in my opinion at least, it requires quite some courage and some strength from leaders to say, hey, this is not about speed, this is not about being the fastest one, but it's about delivering the things that really, really matter, right? And that's I think a very, very important insight. So thank you very, very much, Fatima, for that myth. My second warm-up question is the question for a quick win. So what does that mean? A quick win in our understanding here is a hack or a process or a routine, anything really, of which you say, try that out. That's something that you can do here and you can do it now. You don't need to, you know, study for an MBA. You don't have to travel someplace far away. That's something that you can realize right here and now. And that's something that will bring you forward, that might inspire you, that might make you, well, maybe even more efficient or more effective. So, Christine,
I take that one.
You have an idea for us. What have you brought with you?
So it will make you maybe faster because you get some feedback. So my quick win is to, as a Scrum Master, you do a lot of meeting moderation, but anyone who is leading a meeting can use this, especially now as we are in the remote setting. So maybe it's harder to get some feedback about if the meeting was useful for the people being in the meeting. So the hack is that you ask at the end of the meeting for the return on time invest. So you ask the participants, what's your return on time invest for this meeting on a scale from 1 to 5? 1 means it's completely useless. I gained nothing. I lost the whole time that I spent in this meeting. 3, that's very important, is the average. That's like I gained enough time. I gained enough, like whatever you can gain in a meeting to justify the time that I spent on the meeting. So that's like the usual thing if it's a good meeting. And 5 is high value. This meeting was worth much more than the time that I spent on it. And you can do it very easily by just asking this question in the meeting chat and asking every participant to just type their number from 1 to 5. And then you have very fast an overview. And if they are outliers, then you should ask them like why to get some feedback. And yeah, it's very quick. You can just do it in the last 3 minutes of a meeting and you will have get some feeling for the participants and if this was useful or not.
Thank you so much. That sounds really interesting. However, here's my question. If you do that in with teams where participants know each other, they have been working with one another for quite a while, well, to be honest, I wouldn't feel very, very well if I was to tell all my colleagues, so this for me was a total waste of time and I shouldn't have been looking at your faces for an hour now because this was total nonsense. Yeah. So that's a little bit tricky, isn't it? You have to navigate. There's emotions involved as well and course, sympathies and stuff, right?
Yeah, I mean, of course, you need to have an environment of trust in which this works. And maybe you have this with your team, but maybe you are in an environment where you don't have it. But then it's probably even much more worthful using this or getting it to use because then people start talking to each other. And in that case, I guess if people are not used to this kind of openness, then you need to start with small steps. Maybe do it in a small settings where you know the people trust each other. Or if it's a big round, then really say thank you or pick out some people and ask them why and show that you are really interested in the feedback and why you want to have it as a meeting inviter and really be very happy about when people just maybe half of the people write their number in the chat, you know. I mean, maybe also some people just don't write it because they are scared, but you could still say, okay, if you don't feel comfortable, send me a message afterwards or give me a call or something like that. So be open, show that you really want to know and that you are taking care of the feedback that you get. This is also, you need to do something. If everyone says, okay, it was useless, and then the next meeting is useless again, then people will not give you feedback anymore. So it depends on how you use it and what you do with it.
So thank you. So that feedback is obviously something that I can do in retrospect. So after the meeting, I can ask people, so give me an estimation. Did you waste your time or did you actually gain something from this? There is, however, another thing that I can do in preparation of the meetings, I can ask participants to, if they have to contribute something. So if they have a topic that they want to talk about, I can ask them to estimate for how long, how much time they will need to talk about this in the meeting. So I do have, I myself do have a little bit of experience with that. So you would be asking all participants, do you have topics that you want to discuss today? And if so, how much time would you like us as a team to invest in that? Is it 2 minutes? Is it 5 minutes? Is it 10 minutes? What do you think of techniques such as these in order to prepare meetings, so to make sure that time is invested in a intelligent way. What do you think of that?
No, I think that's very good, and you should do it. Well, it's your responsibility if you invite people not to waste their time. So it's a good way of preparing. And what just came into my mind is the lean coffee methodology, where you actually do this during the meeting. So during the meeting, you have a regularly inspect and adapt, let's say, to check is this topic still relevant for the majority of people in that meeting? And you vote live and you decide, do we spend another, for example, 10 minutes on the topic or not?
Right.
That's very interactive, and you get the feedback immediately, and that's pretty cool, because during a meeting you don't know how it will develop, and maybe you need more time because the topic now is really important for the people or for the group to solve. And just because 1 hour before you said no, we will just do 5 minutes, maybe now it's different. So then you can actually do this inspect and adapt during the meeting and check, okay, what do we do next, what does make sense now.
Yeah, that's a very, very good point. And at the same time, so you can adjust during the meeting, but at the same time, you make sure that people who think this is a total waste of time, right, that they have a chance to articulate this concern before they spend the entire morning talking about whatever. Fatima, you want to contribute?
If I may just add the last sentence, when you talked about trust and whatever Esther shared, is different tools or ways to share this ownership. A meeting, a project, a product, everything that we do, we are all on the same boat. So the more we feel like when we are giving this feedback or this roti to the presenter or the moderator of the meeting, what we usually try to do is not, you are not grading or rating me, you are rating this meeting. So as you, as much as me, are part and active in this meeting. So we just want all together to improve this meeting. And then it gets that part of the emotion a bit more understandable. And it's not just about I am rating someone. Although, as Esther said, you can always also propose to have it anonymously. So without mentioning who is it. So we just get a feeling of what people feel about that meeting, even if they don't want to say exactly who they are. And then we can have transparency. We can never improve if we don't know where we stand. This is very important.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. Thank you both for your very, very inspiring and interesting answers to those warm-up questions. And actually, we've already now been talking for a couple of minutes about techniques, about methods that, well, somehow or other have to do with that big, big continent that we want to talk about today, and that continent is named agility. Now, imagine that we just met. Granted, during Corona, during COVID, that's a little bit tricky, but just imagine we just met in a cafe or wherever, and you told me you work somehow with agility, and I ask you, what's that? What does agility mean? What's the concept of agility? How would you explain that to a stranger that you just met in like 2 or 3 sentences? What would you say? What's the core idea, in your opinion, of agility?
So I usually go hiking, and I have this experience where you get to know
just
new people.
Just on a mountain, right?
Yes. And then they say, what do you do as a job? And I say, I am Scrum Master, and then or Agile Coach. And then I say, so you master Scrum? And right. I have to explain in 3 sentences. What I try to explain is that I say, imagine you are in a dark labyrinth or in the mountain in the dark. So you don't know where you have to go. You cannot just follow a path. The best way is to just interact with your surrounding to find the next step that won't kill you, and then do it again and do it again. So this is a little bit, for me, the explanation of why we need Agile, because we are in a surrounding that we don't know, and we cannot just even think that the illusion that we know and we can plan based on it. So we have to take small steps and get feedbacks as soon as possible.
That sounds so cool. I have to write that down. That's a really, 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 really cool explanation.
Thank you. I had some practice for real life, really.
Agility might mean. Now, yeah, thank you. Thank you so much. That's really cool. So the Agile Manifesto, agility as a way of, you know, redefining and developing the way we work with one another, the way we communicate about work, about ourselves, and so on, that has been around for a little while now. I mean, at least since the 1990s or even the 1980s. And obviously, I don't have to tell you this, and I'm sure most of our listeners know that as well. Agile and agility has the quality of a buzzword. That's something that's, it's cool. It's a cool thing. And yeah. If one of us was a manager, a CEO somewhere, it's super cool to say, yes, we're an agile company. We come out of the agile mindset, and we manifest agile values in what we do, and so on and so on. So being a buzzword, obviously, there's a lot of misinterpretations and misunderstandings about what agility is and what it can be out there. And one of my personal all-time favorite stories is a story that a colleague of mine likes to tell about a company where the board of directors decided that that company would now become agile. It would become agile. It would gain this attribute. And after a couple of months, so after 3 months or 4 months, he would call his subordinates and he would ask, are we agile yet? Is it done? Can we cross that one out? Because we're done with that process. So you're laughing. I guess there's something wrong with that. Fatema, tell me what's wrong about that. Tell me what you're thinking right now.
The point is, like, if I ask you, are you good? Are you a good person? It's not a binary question. We are all good in some ways and not in some other ways. So it's a journey that you start. Becoming agile is nice because you, in my understanding, you realize that you have to inspect yourself constantly. Mm-hmm. When, as soon as you start to realize that, then you also, the first thing we realize that there is no goal destination. It's a journey that goes on. It's a constant improvement. It's a constant self-reflection. And by self, you can see yourself, but you can see your whole organization or your whole team as your body and parts of your body, and make sure that within it there is no conflict, there is no there is healthy interaction, so it can help you to move on and take the next steps. So unfortunately, as you say, people think that you are agile or you are not, and there is a silver bullet. So what should we do to become finally agile? And the problem is that it's not a silver bullet. It's just a journey ongoing with so many creative ways that you will find on your own journey, and you, and that we would learn from new experiences. It's empirical. It goes based on experiences of people, and each and everyone has a specific situation. So it's based on your specific situation. But what is common in all of that is this inspect and adapt aspect of continuously asking for feedback. Like we described Agile a bit earlier, when you are in the mountain and you want to find your way, you cannot plan it. You can just try it, see if it worked, and then try it again and so forth. But you have to have a coordination between your leg and your hand and make sure that it works together well. And therefore comes this self-reflection of knowing what we are good at, what is our skill, and what we are lacking, and what we could have our unique point of sales or uniqueness that we can provide for our client or for the business or for the industry that we are in.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Would you agree if I said, well, agile, that's less something that you are, and it's more something that you do. It's something that is expressed in your behavior, in your thinking, but it wouldn't be that easy to or it would be too easy to identify very specific, you know, you have to have these attributes, and you definitely have to have a dog in the office, and there has to be at least one hipster in the office, or it's not agile, stuff like that. That's not the way to talk about agile. It's far more interesting to take a bird's eye view and to look, how does he or she or that system behave? What does he or she do when faced with challenges, with obstacles? How does he or she work around these? And what does that tell us about the way they interact with their surroundings? Is it something along these lines, Lydia?
Yeah, definitely. Even though I like dogs in the office, and I wouldn't cut that, but that would definitely not be enough. Yeah, sure, of course. And honestly, people that we have worked with and the people who had successful agile transformation, they said that the hardest part of it was to change their own culture and their own mind, mm-hmm. and to give up on some of the belief that they had themselves. Especially higher in the management, the more difficult it is. Therefore, it's all about how you approach things or how you react, how fast and how meaningful you react to the changes in your environment.
Now, Esther, I would like to know the explanation that we have just developed seems to imply that there is not one agility, or there is not one set of behaviors or stuff like that, but that it depends a lot on the individual system that we're looking at and on its surroundings. Or what do you think about that? How individual is agility?
I wouldn't say it's, I have some difficulties because mm-hmm. The agile principles, mm-hmm. they are the same. And okay. these you need to understand, what is this principle about? For example, inspect and adapt. Why do you need it? And then you need to really look, how am I doing this? And you need to understand why it's important, and then do it in the way that this the purpose of this principle becomes true in your environment.
Right.
So okay. I was a little bit mm. yeah, not sure how to answer, because also a lot of people who start with agile, they start and they do whatever, and they say, okay, for us it's all very unique, and we cannot apply the, for example, the Scrum framework, because in our industry it doesn't work, and so on.
Yeah, of course.
And I think that's a little bit dangerous, because like when you don't know yet, when you don't have a good understanding yet of the agile principles and what it really means, then it's good to stick to the rules in the beginning, to just take Scrum and implement it like the rules are, and then that's how you will learn why it's important and why you are doing this. And then after you have mastered that, then you can find your own ways. So that's a better way than at the beginning already saying, okay, we do whatever and we call it agile. But then if you don't have good people leading you who have done it before, then it might end up into chaos and people saying, okay, agile is crap and it doesn't work. And, mm-hmm. you know.
Well, but that's a very good point that you're making there. And obviously, you're absolutely right. The Agile Manifesto, it's written in a way, well, obviously it applies a little bit more to the IT crowd than to, gardeners, but that doesn't necessarily mean that, yeah, you don't agree.
Yeah, I wouldn't say, for example, there's this principle, I'm not sure how it's called, like in the correct words, but business should talk to developers on a daily basis,
right?
Something like that. Yeah. And yeah, if you are a gardener, then you don't have developers, but there is a gardener and he has some business, you know. So I think this is really for everyone the same thing. And you shouldn't say, oh, we are not IT or we are hardware, so it won't work with us.
I'm convinced. You got me. Fatima.
I just want to add something. The truth is that, of course, it raised from software development because that was the first industry that realized that you have a virtual product. Mm-hmm. And it's unknown and it's complex. For things that are simple and you can just plan and follow the plan, then yes, of course, agile, you don't need it. We won't say that everyone needs to work agile. But mm-hmm. as soon as you have complexity or similarities where it's similar to the software world, where requirements are not so clarified beforehand, or there is so new technologies coming every day that we cannot already know of what's coming next. So when there is this kind of uncertainty or unknown, then we can use also this model of agile on a lot of other areas, which is actually also used nowadays, also in education that you wouldn't even think of, and other industries.
Thank you. So the Agile Manifesto, we've talked about it a little bit. I will put a link to it in the show notes. So if listeners are interested in knowing what exactly it says, and if maybe you want to try out, do I see a way that I can adapt this, that I can work with this in my surroundings? Feel free to do so. You'll find a link to that in the show notes. So let's get into the heart of things. I think that you have two, highlight cases that you would like to discuss a little bit, and I am very curious to know what that's about. So the first thing that it says here is an intercultural workshop.
Yes. So as we talked and we said, we have self-reflection in Agile, not only in the Scrum or in the Retro, but on a general basis, we need to see how we work and inspect that, and if we are creating value. And also, as you mentioned earlier, when we ask for feedback and we want to have transparency, then we have to know that we can collaborate and communicate in the right way. Mm-hmm. In my experience, I tried to set up structures, but I realized that at the moment of stress and when people feel in danger, they go back to their behavior, default behavior, okay. The core of their culture, the core of their values and so forth. So I created an event where the team can sit down and self-reflect on values that are given to them. And I'm not just, it seems intercultural, like it's just international teams. Mm-hmm. I'm not talking about just international, that you have studied media or operation or science, you have different yeah. subcultures and different values. But we need all of them to have an end-to-end product. So we need to put those people together, first of all, to let them know how they think, what is offending or what they value most, and then share that with their team. I can share with you a very nice example of my own that we did in one of the workshops. We had a team lead of around 60 years old who was basically born in Germany. And mm-hmm. when we go into intercultural teams, it's usually with a lot of stereotype that I try to take out and clarify that everything is accepted and welcome. And had a whole team of international people. And while talking about the value of directness, that some culture value more directive feedback and some culture value more harmony. So they are very uncomfortable to tell you something before attacking your feeling. And we realized that this team lead of 60 years old who grew up in a hotel family learned to never be direct with anyone. So he had a very hard time giving feedback to his international team who heard from everyone that, you know what, Germans, if they don't tell you anything wrong, anything negative, everything is absolutely fine.
Wow.
And in this team event, we just realized, you cannot imagine the face of that Indian colleague of him who was there and he said, so you really have things that I can improve on and I couldn't get it from you. And it's really that difficult for you to tell us, but everyone just says that Germans are like that and like this. And he was completely red, saying, you know, every time I have to give you feedback, I go back to the park for 10 minutes and walk to calm down. How hard it is for me.
Wow.
Yeah, that's these kind of things that when you spend time to self-reflect and change between the people who are working together, you cannot imagine how we can improve on this interpersonal level. And then we are one strong team checking in which direction we can go, avoiding all the waste of time, energy that is in each and everyone's mind. Am I doing the right thing? Am I saying the right thing? You might also have heard of this study of Google about their most successful team. The most important thing was psychological safety. And this has a huge impact in any team that we work. Whenever we don't have client and supplier or boss or employee, it's really just one team. We can just achieve it when we feel like we are on the same boat. So this is one of the highlights that I wanted to share with you.
Wow, that's really incredible. Thank you so much for that. And I really can, I think everyone has had an experience that, can relate to what you just described. However, a question that I was asking myself right now is, do you think, or in your experience, do most of us explicitly know their values and their cultural backgrounds, or is this something that, obviously we manifest, yes, but we're not even that aware of? How would you
So I worked on this intercultural knowledge in my master's thesis, and I can tell you that in literature, this value and culture is like water for fish. So as long as you are not facing something different, your brain is automatically wired to put away things that you don't need to see anymore because they are always the same. So you don't waste your time. Brain is very, very smart. It will optimize the processes and put them away. But what we lose there is diversity, is creativity. We get into one box. I think that the way we go into the future with having more globalization, having more people from different departments working together, this whole need of diversity bring us or expose us more and more in situation and people who are different than us, not maybe from another country, but from another department. And then you have to ask yourself again those questions. The key here is to remember that there is not just one way for things. And think where we stand now as an organization as well. Where do we want to be? And then see how we can get there with the skills and the assets that we have.
Well, that's so interesting. Thank you so much. And that really brings home the point that it can be so incredibly it's really worthwhile and to make these underlying mechanisms explicit, to find out who are we exactly, what's our constitution as a team, what are the various individual properties that come into this team, and how can we work with them? Because that's quite obvious. I think that's very, very obvious from the example that you just presented. It makes a big difference whether we know about this if we work with one another. So you just talked about that Indian colleague who found out that the feedback he would get from his boss was to be seen with quite an angle. So that's really, really interesting. And obviously that does have huge effects on our work and on our well-being together in the team and productivity as well, of course. So Fatima, thank you very, very much for that highlight that gives us and gives the listeners an idea of what it is that we talk about when we talk about developing teams, working with teams, working with systems, with organizations, making culture something that is explicit, that we can talk about, that we can reflect upon, and the value of that. Because obviously that's not just to for everybody to be you know, happy-go-lucky and feel well and everything, but that has very, very concrete effects on very, very concrete results at the end of our working together. Thank you so much. And Esther, I think you too do have a little highlight that you would like to talk about.
Yeah, it's a story about how you can empower your employees,
mm-hmm.
which of course is also very important in the whole working agile, mm-hmm. because we're moving to have decisions taking place where the knowledge is and where really the expertise is, and not in the highest levels of the organization, mm-hmm. where it takes forever until a decision is made. I'm working in a group with a group of Scrum Masters, and we have a boss, we have a line manager,
mm-hmm.
at Diconium, and it used to be that he would take all the decisions about who works on which project, who has been hired, who gets a promotion, all this kind of stuff. And it's all these Scrum Masters, they don't work together in one team, but they all work on projects with Scrum teams, with our client companies. Yeah, so it's really this internal, the boss is responsible that we are on the right projects, that we do good work, and that we could have a good development for ourselves and for the company. And now the situation changed, and we have a very growing team, and we want to find a way of working together that also fits our values and fits our agile way of working, which we are teaching to our teams.
Mm-hmm.
So we started to identify roles and identify which kind of decisions are being made at the moment by our manager. And then we play delegation poker. So I don't know if you know it, but the delegation or making decisions is not like Fatima always says, a binary thing. So it's either the manager decides or the team decides, but there are levels. There's like a game you can play, and you have 7 levels, and level 1 is that the manager just takes the decision and tells everyone. There's no convincing or talking about it. And level 7, the highest level, is that the team completely decides for themselves without even telling the manager or asking for advice or anything, because it doesn't matter. It's just the team is completely empowered. And then there are levels in between. So the middle is like you agree in a consensus between the team and the manager. So we took all the decisions that usually our manager used to make, and we played delegation poker. So to find out which kind of delegation level do we want to live for this kind of decision. And then that was very, very interesting, because this poker is being played. So everyone thinks about which level do they want to pick. And then you play your card with the number, and then you see, interesting. So for some decisions, actually, our manager wanted to have a much higher delegation level. So he said, you can just decide it. I don't care. And the team was like, oh, no, we want to have some advice from the manager. So that was very interesting. And also then to talk about the different reasons. Why do people think that the team should decide, or we should have a consensus decision, or the manager should decide? So that's very interesting to talk about it. For our manager, it's very an interesting process at the moment, because he's very used to just do everything. And he has a responsibility in our organization. He's the manager of our team, so he needs to decide. And now he's giving away this power to us. And for him, of course, it feels also a little bit weird that all of a sudden it's not only him, you know? So that's very interesting for all of us to do this together. And we want to check regularly if this is still the right decision, delegation level and so on. So we also have some inspect and adapt, of course, in this. That's very funny.
thank you so much. Now, delegation poker is a way of introducing that idea of more self-organization within a team, I guess. A question that I have now that just came to mind is, you just said it might feel weird for the manager to give up parts of his, you know, authority and to let the team take decisions. But isn't it the other way around too? Aren't there, colleagues, employees who are very, very used to being told what to do, what not to do? And for them too, it might feel super, super weird if you ask them, so how would you decide? I can imagine that there are plenty of people who are like, whew, I don't know, why do you ask me? So are there, what are your tricks or your techniques or your questions to invite people into just considering more self-organization? Because I think that takes a level of, convincing as well, doesn't it? Or maybe it's not convincing, maybe it's seducing. It's really, you have to make people understand that this is something really, really nice, really, really interesting. But how do you do that?
I think it's not that the people don't like it or they don't find it interesting. It's maybe more about security. And if you feel secure, like if you're not the manager, all of a sudden making such a decision. And I think if you're in the manager position, a very good question to ask is, what do you need? What would you need to take this decision? Or in German, even saying, was braucht es? Nicht, was brauchst du? What would be needed? I don't know how to put it in English, but because this opens the room for, okay, why do I actually have a problem taking a decision here? What would I need from who or to be able to take the decision? And then you can talk about why it's hard for the person to decide something and why maybe there is some resistance or something.
That's a very, very interesting distinction that you just opened up there with the German question, was braucht es? So I guess in English, what's needed in order to get this job done? Because there you introduce a room for your discussion in which there are no subjects, there is no hierarchy, there is just the project, the challenge. And then you ask people, well, in your opinion, how would one solve this problem? How would one overcome this obstacle? And you don't need to talk that much about, you know, all that stuff around hierarchies and positions and responsibilities and stuff like that. So that's a very, very, I think a very, very interesting and smart way to talk about that and to invite people to consider more self-organization. So thank you both very, very much for a couple of very interesting and inspiring insights into your work as professional Scrum Masters at Diconium, and especially your work surrounding all that, well, I called it a continent of agility, and all those regions you may want to travel to if you take a look at that continent. For example, Fateme, you talked about values, about cultural about underlying cultural constructs that might have effect and why it might very much be worth talking about these and reflecting these. A very, very interesting topic, I think. And Esther, you just described a very, very smart way to get teams into talking into finding a shared mindset when it comes to talking and working with obstacles, with challenges, a mindset that allows us to transcend that very, very classical and very, very old distinction of hierarchies and positions and so on and so on. Thank you both very, very much for that. Now, before we land this plane, there's always a little cool down question that we like to ask at the end, and that cool down question is one for kudos. So you are very much invited to send somebody or someone or something a virtual kudo. tell us about a book or a lecture or a podcast or a movie or a game or whatever you want that you want to recommend today. Who wants to go first?
Okay, I go first. So I can really recommend, if you're looking for some training as Scrum Master or Agile Coach, which is not the usual Scrum Master, you know, certification, the Sensing the Essence, that's the name of it. It's a training for team coaching and facilitation. It's in Berlin. I did it from, I think if you Google Sensing the Essence, you will probably find it. And it's called Sensing the Essence because it's really, you will learn how to sense what's going on in the group that you are working with at the moment. And as a facilitator, how to find out what does the group need right now. So, and I did that and that was really cool and helped me a lot in my daily work as a Scrum Master.
Sensing the Essence. Thank you so much. And I'll put a link to the show notes. Thank you. Fatima.
So from my side, I would like to give the kudos to a very famous, already famous person, Dave Snowden, who's the author of the, as he called it, Kinefin. That's the Wallish name of Cinefin framework. You might have heard of this framework where it describes complex, complex, complicated, clear, and chaotic.
Yes.
And where Agile is placed, and they work on this complexity theory. It's very fascinating. I'm also quite a beginner, but it's really interesting for whoever wants to know more about complexity in general. And it's even more important for industries and businesses who have criticality to really find innovative way and to address the high levels of complexity.
So. Thank you so much. I still remember when I came across that theory for the first time and I was like, wow, that explains everything. Finally, a way to sort things out. I find it to this day, I find it highly fascinating. And it does have a lot of potential to understand and obviously also to develop new ways of thinking about systems, about interactions, and so on.
Yeah, they are also organizing a complexity theory weekend. It's in 2 weeks, for example, where people from 49 countries in the world just voluntarily spend their weekend talking about complexity in different domain and diversity, and it's just great.
Very, very cool. Thank you so much. And I'll make sure to put a link in the show notes to that weekend as well, to those activities. Fatema, Esther, thank you so much that you took the time to introduce a couple of ideas and a couple of, stories and anecdotes and experiences about agility, about your work as professional Scrum Masters for Diconium in today's podcast. Thank you so much, and thank you as well to our listeners. And we hope to hear you, or we hope that you hear us actually, very, very soon. Bye. That was a first. That was the first English episode of Everyday Counts, the LIDA podcast. Now, LIDA is your app for good work, available both for iOS and for Android devices. And LIDA is available in English as well. So if you dig the podcast, then you might actually like the English app as well. Just try it out. It's available at the Google Play Store and at the App Store.